Job. A lot of wonderful things in Job. But let me read these first 12 verses and pick up from there. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. Now Uz was in where Arabia is. Job was up here in the northeast corner. That's where the land of Uz was. And his name was Job. And that man was perfect and upright, and one that feareth God and eschewed evil. And there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 she-asses, and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all the men in the east. And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and sent and called for their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning, and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned, and cursed God in their hearts." And thus did Job continually. He done that regularly. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, "Where'd you come from? Where are you coming from?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job?" Have you ever thought about him, considered him? Set your heart on him, that there is none like him in the earth? What a statement God makes about this man. No, not another man in the earth like this man. Not another one. A perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. Then answered the Lord and said, "Doth Job fear God for naught?" That's what I want to deal with tonight. Does Job fear God for nothing? "Hast thou not made a hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. Put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he'll curse thee to thy face." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put forth not thine hand." So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. Does Job fear God for naught? Job is the oldest writing in the Bible. He probably lived between Abraham and Moses, and it was certainly after the flood. And there's lots of questions that men have been troubled with over the centuries, over the years, as long as man's been. And philosophers and theologians and people always ask these questions. And there's 5 great problems, but I'm only going to deal with one of them tonight. Man's been troubled from the beginning, and they've sought answers to 5 great problems. They're moral problems, philosophical problems, religious problems, spiritual problems. And here's the one I want to deal with tonight. There's 5 of them. This one I want to deal with mostly. Is it possible for people like you and me, or any man, to be activated by a pure, unselfish love for God, his creator, his maker, and his savior, and do it unselfishly for nothing but God himself? That's a question. You know, that's what he asked there, verse 9. Satan asked, he said, "Does Job fear God for nothing?" Does he fear God for nothing? And this is the way most men answer this problem. They say, "Well, you want to go to heaven, don't you?" Well, who in the world don't want to go to heaven? And they say, "You want to go see mama again?" They make all these earthly issues to be the answer to this problem. But I tell you what, when you start thinking about a man or a woman that will love God, activated in their hearts and in their souls towards God, and expect nothing from him except you worship him and love him for who he is, not for what he does for you, And that's what most people do. They do what they do for God because what God does for them. And I tell you what, that's a great, great question, huh? And I tell you, you go, and I've got five more questions. But Job's a noble book. And I tell you what, this is a wonderful book. And the first and oldest statement in the ever-living problem with man is man's destiny and God's weight with him in this earth. Where is our destiny? And where we, how's God deal with us on this earth? Huh? How's God deal with us? And the first question is asked there, you know, can a man fear God for nothing? Well, this was answered clearly and plainly by the most severe trials upon this man Job. I mean, nobody has went through what Job did. There's been a lot of people went through a lot of things. And I've heard of families losing every member of their family but one. I've heard of people going bankrupt. I've heard of people doing a lot of things, but I never, ever met anybody that went through what Job did. And that's what Satan said, listen. He said this, he said, you know, here's the problem. You put a hedge around Job, and you've made him wealthy. And you let him take out everything away from him, take that hedge down. You know what Job will do? He'll get right up in your face and put his finger in your face and start cussing you. That's what I said. That's exactly what Job will do. That's exactly what. Oh, my. Job was a great man. Great in wealth. He is smart. He was an intellectual person. He had great, great moral character. Oh, listen, he sat at the gate and people came to him for his wisdom. But he has tried. God tried him to settle this question once and for all. Whether man is capable of serving God and free from all selfish motives from themselves. Does Job fear God for naught? Asked Satan. Oh, he's serving you because you've prospered him. You've prospered him. He doesn't love you. He doesn't serve you. Except you prosper him. He does good in your sight just to get what you give him, to get gain. And you've made a hedge around him. You've blessed the workers of the hands. And it's all selfishness. That's what Satan said. He's selfish. Job serves you from what you can get out of him. I remember reading about a church or hearing about a church years and years ago. I don't even think it exists anymore. I believe I could almost tell you what church it was. But they asked two questions when people came to be members of their congregation. They asked two questions. Do you serve God for what you can get out of him? That's the first question. And do you think by your efforts you can get those things God to do those things for you? Do you serve him for what he gets up, gives you? And do you think by your efforts you can get him to give you those things and do those things for you? Now let's look at Job. See if he fears God for nothing. Let's see if Satan can cause God to him to curse God. As Job went through three trials, and I'm just going to deal with three of them, and of course in a lot of different ways, but I'm going to deal with them just starting out in this book. First of all, he was tried circumstantially. Job is meeting with his sons. Remember his meeting with his sons? And he offered sacrifices for them. Said it may be they sinned. And I tell you what, here he comes and he's offering sacrifices for his sons, and he done this continually and his daughters because he loved them and he cared for them and he enjoyed them. And they were a great blessing to his heart. And while they're meeting, here comes Satan. He comes walking along. And listen to this. God spoke to him. Satan didn't speak to God. God spoke to Satan. He said, look here. See my servant Job over there? You ever thought about him? You ever thought about him? As Almighty calls his attention to Job. And I tell you what. People say Job wasn't saved to the end of the book. But God says right here there's nobody on the earth like him. Said he is a perfect man, a just man, and an upright man. Now we understand how he was perfect. We understand how he was just. We understand how he was righteous. God made him that way. He did not do this by his own efforts. He'd be the first to tell you, I did not attain what I've got. I'm not a just man because I don't do bad things. I'm not a perfect man because I do wonderful things. He said, I'm not a righteous man because I, by my own efforts. Everybody knows that that's how you're just. God makes you just. God makes you perfect. God makes you righteous. And that goes without saying about Job. Anyway, Satan, he knows human nature. He knows human nature. He overthrew our first parents when they were in the Garden of Eden in paradise. And they didn't know what sin was. So he overthrew them, and he knows human nature. And he said, oh, listen, you really got your eye on Job, and you say he's a fine fella, and he's a wonderful man. But I tell you what, there's a reason he fears you. He don't fear you just for nothing. You know why he fears you? Because all you do for him. And so what God does, he says, now, Satan, the Lord said there in verse 12, all that he hath, his substance now, all that he has is in your hands. Don't touch him. Don't touch him. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. Oh, my. You read this first chapter. And here's Job. Here he is. Worshiping God. Meeting, offering sacrifices for his children. And there was a day in verse 13. Look what happens now. He was tried on one of the happiest days of his life. And there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. They's all together. It's a wonderful family. There's a close-knit family. They all love to get together. And they'd go from one mother's house, and they'd enjoyed one mother's company. So the whole family was in this house. And Satan starts. Satan starts right then and there. He sends trial after trial to confound Job, to get him to curse God. And look what he said in verse 14. And there came a messenger unto God, unto Job, and said, the oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside. Zebians fell on them and took them away. Killed all your servants, and I'm only alone, escaped to tell thee. Well, all right, I lost a few oxen. I can get some more. And while he was yet speaking, standing there in front of Job talking, there came another one running up. The fire of God's fallen. What that fire of God means is lightning struck them. The fire of God's fallen from heaven and burned up the sheep, killed all the sheep, and the servants, and killed the servants, and consumed them. And I'm the only one allowed here to come tell you about it. And while he was, there's two men standing there, yet speaking. And then there came another. And the Chaldeans made out of three bands. They come on from three different sizes. Fell upon the camels, carried them all away, slew all your servants with the edge of the sword, and I'm only escaped alone to tell you. Now, I tell you what. You all lost two cows the other day, didn't you? He lost all of his cattle. All of his cattle. Oh, my. Well, these are things that can be replaced. They can be replaced. And while he was yet speaking, one standing there, and here comes another, and here comes another, and here comes the fourth. Here comes the fourth one. And while he was yet speaking, there came also another, and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their elder's brother's house. And behold, there come a great wind, probably a tornado, from the wilderness, and smote the four corners of that house, tore that house down right around them. And all fell upon the young men, and they are dead. And I only am escaped alive to fulfill it. Now, what's Job going to do? What's Job going to do? Sheep's gone. Camels are gone. Oxen are gone. And now all of his kids are gone. what's he going to do? Satan said he's going to raise his fist up to God and say, God, I hate you. I despise you. I don't want nothing to do with you. Nah. Did he curse God? Did he blaspheme? How in the world can he stand with this kind of news? How can he stand? Why ain't he on his face weeping and crying and moaning and groaning? God, why did you do this to me? How does he stand? Surely, surely this will end his faith. His love will turn to anger. He'll curse the Almighty. He lost all. Does he shriek? Does he scream? Does he holler? Is he full of angerness, bitterness? Going to give up living? No, look what he said. Verse 20. Then Job arose, rent his mantle, rent his coat, shaved his head, and fell down upon the ground and worshiped. I don't believe I could have done that. I'm just going to tell you right up front, I couldn't believe I could have done that. And said, naked I came out of my mother's womb. I didn't have nothing when I come into this world. And I'm going to go back just the way I came. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That's not what Satan expected him to do, was it? And then not in all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Oh, that's what the devil, he didn't expect that, did he? He didn't expect that. He tried him with all of his circumstances. I heard a man say today, his daughter was killed. She was murdered. They found the murderer. But he says, when I lost my daughter, I lost my faith. He said, that man upstairs, that's what he said, that man upstairs said, why would he let something like that happen to me? So he said, I quit. I lost my faith. I tell you what, he didn't have any faith. If all it takes is God to cause us to turn his back on him and cuss him to his face by him taking something from us, then we're not serving him for nothing. We're not serving him for who he is. Ain't that right? Not only was he tried circumstantially, everything around him's gone. He's sitting in the house. Oh, my sons and daughters over there, they're enjoying themselves. I got people out there plowing the fields. I got camels going here and yonder, bringing me wealth from every part of the world. Bam, 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 bam. All gone. All gone. So quick. Oh, I tell you what. But what did he do? He said, God said, Satan said, he's going to cuss you. Well, go ahead. Try it. Try it. Well, he was tried physically then. Well, look down here in chapter 2. Well, there was a day. And that's what it said there before. There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. Over in verse 6, it repeats the same thing. There was a day when the sons of God, children of God, people like us called sons of God, came to present themselves before the Lord. And here comes Satan again among them to present himself before the Lord. Huh? And the Lord said unto Satan, where are you coming from? Satan answered and said, Lord, he said, answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth, from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said, hast thou considered my servant Job? There's none like him in the earth, perfect and upright man, one that feareth God, eschews evil, and still, listen to this, this is what God says about him in verse 3, and still holdest his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. Well, Satan said, listen, I'll try him again, and I'll make sure he cusses you to your face this time. And Satan answered and said to the Lord, yea, skin for skin. For all that ever a man has, he'll give it for his own life. Why, if you listen, you let me live, you can have everything I got. Just let me live. If I can just keep on living. But Satan said, but you put forth your hand now and touch his bones, touch his flesh, and then he'll curse you. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he is in your hand. But listen, touch his body, but don't touch his soul. Don't touch his life. So here comes this other meeting in heaven. Satan comes again. God's still talking about Job, what a wonderful, wonderful servant he is. He had tried Job to the fullest extent God allowed him to, and he failed. And God said, listen, there's Job, said, you tried to make that, you caused me up without a cause to move my hand against him. And he testifies to Job's faith, and he says, oh, listen, he holds his integrity. You did your best. And he still is loyal to me. He still is a loyal, loving servant, one. Well, Satan said, well, you've only let me at his circumstances, his substance. I've never touched his person. You let me touch his person. Now, he's a strong man. He's full of health. He's still living. That's what makes him steadfast. Let me at him. Let me at his flesh. Let me at his body. And he'll curse you. God told him, said, well, in verse 6, said, he's in your hands. Do whatever you want to do. But save his life. Don't touch his soul. Well, Satan works again. Goes to work again. So Satan went forth in verse 7 from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. Oh my. He was full of corruption from his feet, sole of his feet, to top of his head. There wasn't a spot on his body that wasn't full of corruption. Boils. Sickening things coming out of him. He was just emaciated, covered up with all this. Just when they looked at him, it was on his face, on his ears, under his chin, on his forehead, on the top of his head, all up and down his arms, all up and down his belly and his back, up and down his legs. Oh, listen. Oh, he smites him with the most painful, loathsome disease. Job's in agony. Look what it says. He took a potsherd to scrape himself, and he sat down among ashes. He needed some relief, so he sat down among ashes. He said, I'll take these ashes and put on me. I'll scrape these things and put ashes on these things. Maybe that'll help. That'll help. Oh, he's in agony. His existence is miserable, almost unbearable. His appearance is abhorrent. And even to his own wife, look what his wife said to him in verse 9. Huh? His wife said unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. Get it over with. Go ahead and curse God and let him kill you. Let him kill you. Oh my. How does he stand it? How does he still go on? How does he answer? What's his reaction to his wife? What if when everybody else is against you, if your wife stands true to you, you can make it. But when your wife tells you, Job, listen, just quit. Just give up. Just give up, Job. Listen, you're just fighting a losing battle. Oh my. But he said unto her, verse 10, you speak as one of those foolish women. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of the Lord? And shall we not receive evil? Trouble? Vexation? Trouble in this world? And all this did not Job sin with his lips. Oh my. Can you conceive of a greater trial than all of his property gone, his service gone, sons and daughters gone? There's nobody to comfort him. His wife don't comfort him. Nobody's to comfort him. Nobody comes to Job and say, Job, I'm so sorry. Nobody come to him and wept with him. We hear about one of our brothers and sisters that gets real sick and goes through a great trial, and we'll weep over him. We'll cry with them. We'll weep with them. And we'll say, I'm so sorry that you're having to go through this. I'm so sorry that you're going through this. We weep over them. But Job didn't have anybody to come up to him, put his arms around him, and said, Job, I'm so sorry that you're going through this. His wife ought to come and said, Job, listen, let me wash your wounds. Let me take care of your wounds. Let me watch out for you. Let me comfort you. Job, just give it up. Just give it up. Go ahead and cuss God. Die. Get it over with. But oh no. No, no. Sir, health is gone. Service gone. He said, you know, if this hadn't happened to him, he said, I still have my health. I still have my strength. And by hard work and diligence, I'll recover my wealth. But oh my. Oh, everybody's gone. I still have a loving, dedicated wife. But that wasn't the case. And all this great trial brought to bear upon this man. And he's left alone by himself. And the only reason that God did this is to show us that it is absolutely possible for a man to fear God for nothing. For nothing. That Job wasn't a selfish man, interested only in what God did for him and his health. And that's one thing that I tell you I utterly, utterly despise, is this health and wealth gospel. Preachers tell people all the time, boy, if you pay your tithes, be faithful, man, you can drive the best automobiles money will pay for. You can live in the biggest houses. You can, oh, listen, you can have health. Oh, God will bless you. God will bless you. God will bless you. Well, here's a man that had everything. And God took everything he had and then took his health away from him. Took his health away from him. Tell you what I told my doctor last week. You know, I go in once a year to get my blood took and have a physical and all that, you know. I told him, said, you know, said, Doc, I said, I know I'm going to leave this world one of these days. But I tell you one thing I'm going to do. He said, I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to eat right, and I'm going to run, and I'm going to do all the things that you need to do to stay healthy. So when you ever hear me dying, I'm going to die healthy. He said, yep, that's going to be your obituary. Donnie Bell died, but he died healthy. But now listen, Job wasn't going to die healthy. Here he was. He wasn't healthy. He wasn't healthy. Oh my, what would happen to me if my health was gone just like that? It could happen. It could happen. Les Heller's daddy, missionary for 50-something years in Papua New Guinea, translated the Bible in some of those tribal languages. And now, he don't hardly know who he is or where he's at or anybody else around him. He don't know to drink. They had to force water down him. He don't know what it is to take a bath now. He don't know what it is to change clothes. He just goes to bed with the clothes he gets on, gets up with them. Oh, we don't know what's going to happen to us when we leave this world. But I'll tell you this before I move on to my next point. That man may not know who he is and where he is and what he's supposed to do. But God knows who he is. God knows where he is. And God knows how he is. And when the time's done, he's going to take him home. Ain't that right? Your daddy didn't, you know, your daddy, he said, listen, I can't wait for the Lord to come get me. That's what Job, he said, listen, Job did not sin or charge God. He did sin not with his mouth. He did not sin with his mouth. Oh my. Just to show us that man can worship God and not lose everything else they got and worship God. And then let me give you the last point. Not only was he tried in his substance and in his circumstances and in his health, but he was tried theologically. Now, what do I mean by that? He was tried about his view of God. About his view of God. Now here's what his friends said to him when they came down there. They come afar. Look what it says down here in verse 11. Now when Job's three friends heard of all, chapter 2, 11, heard of all this evil that's come upon him, they came every one from his own place, Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, for they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. And when they lifted up their eyes afar off and knew him not, they didn't even recognize him. He was in such a sad state and so sick and so awful looking that they didn't recognize him. That's not Job. That's not Job. And they knew him not. They lifted up their voice and wept. And they went every man, sprinkled dust upon his head, and they sat down on the ground 7 days and seven nights and never said a word. Never said a word. But here's what they said, and this is what men say today. I was told this and taught this about all my life, and I tell you, the fundamentalists believe this, the average Baptist believe this, and almost all religions believe this. Afflictions comes immediately from the hand of God when God gets angry with you, and He afflicts you. He afflicts you. He proves that God regards him who's afflicted as a great, great sinner. He afflicts you because you sinned. He makes you suffer because you sinned. And I tell you, that's what they said. Job, you must have really, really, really sinned for God to let this come on you. And that's the way religion is. If something sickness comes upon you, God's getting even with you. Car breaks down, God's getting even with you. Children get sick in the hospital, God's punishing you. You better find out where that sin's at in your life. You better get rid of it. That's natural doctrine. But Job's soul said, that's not so. That's not so. His friend said he was a great sinner, that God was against him. And this goes on day after day after day after day. Torture to his heart and to his mind. Does his loyalty to God give away? Give away? No. No, let me tell you. Does his faith in God quit? Let me show you two verses of scriptures in closing. Look in Job chapter 13, verse 15. God gives us these things and teaches these things to show us that a man, people like us, no matter what God does, we're still going to worship Him. We're going to worship Him. We're going to worship Him. Remember when you didn't have anything? But look what it said here in chapter 13, verse 15. Though he slay me, though he kills me, that's all right. Yet I'm going to trust him. I'm going to trust him. And I'm going to maintain my ways before him. I'm going to keep on just like I always have. I'm going to keep on worshiping him, keep on honoring him, keep on trusting him, though he slay me. Look in chapter 19. In chapter 19, verse 25. I've preached from this place several times over the years. Oh my, Job, the question settled for all time that a human soul can fear God for nothing. And he said here in verse 25, he said, listen to this now, for I know that my Redeemer liveth. Not going to live, that he lives right now. Talking about being a perfect man, a just man, an upright man, a righteous man. Right there proves it. My Redeemer living right now. The one that bought my soul and paid for my sin. Right now my Redeemer lives. Right now. Not going to live. Right now. And I tell you what he's going to do. When this world comes to an end, he's going to stand at the latter day upon the earth. Oh my. Now listen. And after I go to the grave and skin worms to sell this body, listen to what it says now. But in this body, I'm going to still see him one of these days. And listen to this. I'm going to see him for myself. I'm going to see him for myself. You know why he said I'm going to see him for myself at the end? Because he's seen him for himself in the beginning. If you see him for yourself now, you'll see him for yourself when you go into eternity. Huh? Listen. And I'll tell you what, that's what he said, yeah. Oh, if he slays me, I'm going to trust him. My Redeemer's living right now. I tell you, true religion, religion that God gives a man, salvation that God gives a man, it makes God to be more precious to them and Christ be more precious to them than anything else in this world. His relation, our relationship to him is more, it's not based on our wealth. It's not based on our children. Not based on our reputation. Not based on our health. Not based on our theological convictions. And we're all what you call Calvinists. But it's based upon the life that God himself gave us in Christ. We cannot do without him. We can do without everything in this world, but you can't do without him. You can lose your home, but you can't lose Christ. You can lose your wife, but you can't lose Christ. You can lose your health, but you can't lose Christ. You can lose everything you got, and God will still say, he is mine. And I say, you'll say like Solomon said, my beloved is mine, and I am his. And I tell you what, God will try you and try you and try you, and see what I tell you, if it don't come out that way. Hey, how many times he tried you, and it's come out that way? Huh? Oh, my. Oh, listen. This is what the Lord taught. This is what the Lord gives. You know what the Lord causes us to be concerned about? A little about the gains and losses here, or heaven and hell. When God saves us, he concerns us with the relationship with God himself. And that's all that really matters when it's all said and done. This will perish. She'll perish. I'll perish. You'll perish. You'll perish. But God will always be God. Christ will always be Christ. And salvation will always be of God in Christ. And the only hope we've got is him. Take everything else away, and we still got him. Lose your mind, but God knows it. Lose your health, God knows it. I tell you what, thank God. Thank God that we're in his hands. And you know, there ain't a thing in the world. I heard Bruce Crabtree preach on this very thing. The Lord gave, the Lord take away. One of these days, that other shoe's going to drop, and she's going to close her eyes, and Bruce's going to be standing there with her when she leaves this world. And he'll stand there and weep. But will it make him forsake his God? No. No. I've seen too many men. I've seen a man bury a son and a daughter. A preacher bury a son and a daughter. And he kept right on preaching. Where was God when your son died? Same place he was when his son died. He's on his throne. Oh, listen, we worship God for who he is. Who he is. Oh, I tell you. If we can't worship him for who he is, that's what this whole thing's about. He don't have to give me nothing to cause me to love him and worship him. Nothing. Well, I gotta quit. Our Father, oh, our Father. How glorious you are. How precious you are. How blessed you are. Solomon said, the heaven of heaven of heavens can't contain you. And Lord, no matter how thick the darkness may get, it's just like light unto you. No matter how strong the storm may be, you'll always say, "Peace be still." And no matter what happens to us in this world, you've always upheld us, always kept us. And Lord, oh Lord Jesus, we give ourselves to you, Lord. And I'm so thankful you take us. You take us the way we are. You take us the way we are. Not like we want to be. Not even like we ought to be. But like we are. And Lord, I thank you for that. Thank you for teaching us these things in your precious, precious word. God bless these saints as they go their way. For Christ's sake. For Christ's sake. Amen. Amen. Well, good night. God bless you. I tell you what, it's overwhelming to think about God. It's just overwhelming how faithful he is, how precious he is.